right, we're here on case 10-611 and 10-858, Welsh Development Company et al. Versus Warren County Regional Planning Commission. For the appellants, Mr. Blixendorfer.
Blixendorfer. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the Court, I am Matt Blixendorfer on behalf of the appellants. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Okay. The notices of administrative appeal at issue in this case were in the proper form, and they were actually delivered to both
counsel,
the
court. Counsel, could you just a little closer to the mic? Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Notices of administrative appeal at issue in this case were in the proper form and were actually delivered to both the Common Pleas Court and the relevant agency within the 30-day time limit for appealing. Nonetheless, the 12th District held that that was not sufficient. It took issue with the form and the manner in which the notices of appeal were delivered, as well as the identity of who delivered them. The 12th District's holding is unfaithful to the governing statute. It ignores this Court's prior guidance for administrative appeals, and it makes for bad public policy. The applicable statute is, of course, Revised Code Section 2505.04, which says that an administrative appeal is perfected when it is filed. The statute itself does not, of course, define what it means to be filed. This Court supplied that gap in the Dudakovich case in 1979, in which the Court held that filing means actual delivery. This Court said, quote, "No particular method of delivery is prescribed by the statute," unquote. The point of the Dudakovich case was that it doesn't matter how a notice of appeal arrives at the agency or the Common Pleas Court. It matters only that it arrives on time and in the proper form. This has been the law in Ohio since at least 1885, when this Court held in King against Penn, which was a appeal from a final decision of a court, that filing meant nothing more than the good faith delivery of a paper to the proper officer to be filed. There's no reason to retreat from the rule of law established in King against Penn, reaffirmed in Dudakovich, and yet several Ohio districts have done exactly that. The statute itself does not require any particular method of delivery. And, of course, the purpose of a notice of appeal is simply to let the opposing party know that an appeal is being taken. That purpose is fully satisfied, regardless of how the notice of appeal arrives and regardless of who delivers it. I'd like to comment on some of the arguments.
Counsel, what were the circumstances that allowed for the — it's the clerk of court that served the notice, correct?
The clerk of court, by direction of the appellant, through a precipice.
Per precipice. Okay.
Correct.
So I just wanted to — for recollection, it was through the precipice that occurred. So it was explicit. It wasn't — which brings me to my question. Say the clerk of court had received that for filing at the clerk's office. For whatever reason, and sua sponte took it down. There was no precipice. There was no instruction to do so. And there wasn't a separate notice given to the entity that is entitled by statute or required by statute to have notice. What would your position be then?
I would suggest, Chief Justice O'Connor, that that's still acceptable because the purpose of the notice of appeal is satisfied. Now, obviously, an appellant is
so as long as there's time and form and the proper recipient coming together, it's timely. The form is pursuant to statute or regulation, and the proper recipient pursuant to statute eventually receives it within that time frame. That's sufficient.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I don't believe the statute requires anything else, either textually or through its purpose, which, of course, is simply to notify the opposing party, which in this case would be the agency, that the appeal is being taken. Now, obviously, the appellant is taking a grave risk by embarking on the scenario that you described. And so there's certainly a form of self-regulation inherent in all of this. People generally are trying to preserve their appellate rights, and they're going to take the necessary steps to do so. I would also point out that this precipice form of sending the notice of appeal to an administrative agency is, I think, probably a fairly common practice, and it serves a very practical purpose, and that is that the appeal is often coupled with constitutional claims, which, of course, cannot be brought at the agency level, can only be brought in the first instance at the Court of Common Pleas, and therefore, many counsel will prepare both a combined notice of appeal and complaint. And, of course, the complaint is normally served by the clerk of courts via a precipice through certified mail. So this is not an illogical or impractical choice for people to make. And while I don't have any facts and figures on how often it's done, I suppose it's probably done with some frequency for that very reason. And in fact, the fact that there are multiple published decisions on this very issue among the various districts suggests that it is done with some frequency.
Maybe the question is it's done and to generate litigation for us, because we get a lot of these cases from time to time, as you point out.
Yeah. Yeah, Justice O'Donnell, it shouldn't generate litigation either. I mean, the rules for taking an appeal should be clear, and they should be accessible, and they should be as bright line as possible.
So what do we write if we want that to be known to the general members of the bar in this case?
You write that the requirement for taking an administrative appeal is actual delivery at both the Common Pleas Court and the agency within the time prescribed. I think that's as clear as a rule as this court can provide, and I think it's far, far clearer than anything the 12th District has to offer or the Regional Planning Commission advocates in this case. And that's because the rule advocated by the Regional Planning Commission and adopted by the 12th District is going to lead to sideshow litigation about who delivered the notice of appeal, how it got there. In many cases, you may not even know who delivered the notice of appeal. Someone could mail a notice of appeal in without a return address on it. In fact, if that had happened in this case, we wouldn't be here, because we wouldn't be arguing about the clerk having served the notice of appeal.
I guess that's the legal question for me. Is service by a clerk the same as filing by a party?
In this context, I believe it is, Justice O'Donnell. I don't believe that that's a distinction with any difference in this context. It certainly does have a difference in many contexts. In common pleas court litigation, for instance, you file with the clerk of courts and you serve on opposing counsel. Well, in this context, that distinction breaks down. Whether you want to call it service or filing, the point is the notice of appeal is being actually delivered to the agency. And it seems to me that it's really just a semantical game to call it one thing versus another.
And had the clerk delayed in serving this notice of appeal beyond the time limit, what would your argument be there?
We wouldn't have an argument, Justice O'Donnell. We would be out of time under the rule of law that we are advocating. And I might point out that the Regional Planning Commission submitted a case from the 10th District as supplemental authority after the briefs were filed, which presented exactly that issue. And the 10th District's response was, we're aware of the Welsh development case that's pending before the Supreme Court, but regardless of what happens there, that won't control because this notice of appeal didn't reach the agency until after the allotted time. So we would be out of luck. I'm not arguing for forgiveness for people who are untimely here. I'll save that for another day. I have a more limited proposition to offer here today.
What was the form of the notice of appeal that was delivered to the Regional Planning Commission by the clerk? Did those include original signatures, or were those photocopies? Or
I assume that they were photocopies, Justice Cupp. They certainly looked to be. The form they took, it was a combined complaint and notice of appeal. The complaint articulated constitutional claims and included the prerequisites laid out by 2505.05 for an administrative notice of appeal. It was sent with a summons by certified mail. So I presume it was a photocopy, which doesn't make any difference in the context of a 2505 appeal. I know there's been a fair amount of litigation in the context of Chapter 119 about originals versus copies, although I think the General Assembly has addressed that issue in Chapter 119. But in the context of a 2505 appeal, I don't believe that makes any difference. But that was the form that it took.
And did the Regional Planning Commission know what this document was, and did they put it in the right file, and did they forward the transcript to the court, or was there some confusion about it?
I don't think there was any confusion at all, Justice Cupp. The transcript was forwarded. The appeal was preceded. In fact, this was going to an argument on the merits, and the motion to dismiss came up at a fairly late stage in the course of this litigation, relatively speaking. So there was no confusion. It was stamped, received by the Regional Planning Commission before the statutory deadline. Any lawyer who looked at that would know exactly what was being done there. I mean, the complaint and notice of appeal on its face said that it was a complaint and notice of administrative appeal. So, I'd like to address just a few policy arguments, Your Honors, in my remaining time. And the first one I hit upon already, and that is the issue of clarity. The 12th District's rule provides no workable clarity for the courts or the citizens of Ohio. The 12th District and the Regional Planning Commission have not articulated any basis for line drawing here. We don't know what their proposed rule would be and what the required method of filing a notice of appeal would be. Does the appellant herself have to walk it in? Is mail acceptable? If mail's acceptable, does it have to be the appellant herself who mails it? What about the appellant's counsel? What about a third-party courier service retained by the appellant's counsel? Very quickly, you can see how there's no certainty whatsoever to the rule articulated by the 12th District. And what this is going to invite is, as Justice O'Donnell suggested, a lot of extra, ancillary, burdensome, and unnecessary litigation about how to take an administrative appeal. And it's really for no good reason, because regardless of the way the notice of appeal arrives, purpose of it is satisfied. And so what we have is a rule of law here articulated by the 12th District that provides no clarity, that will invite further litigation, and will deny citizens of Ohio their rights to take administrative appeals. All for, as far as I can tell, no basis, either textual or purposeful, in the statute from the General Assembly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Lance.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court of Ohio. May it please the Court, my name is Kevin Lance. I'm here on behalf of the Warren County Regional Planning Commission. The Commission asks the Court to affirm the judgment of the 12th District Court of Appeals because it properly interpreted the language of Revised Code Section 2505.04.
Counsel, did your client timely receive a notice of appeal?
We received service of process, which contained a notice of appeal.
So you were on notice that there was an appeal?
That's correct.
Okay. And you proceeded based on that notice. You didn't ask for another one or say this isn't good enough. You proceeded to respond to that appeal based only on that document to trigger it, correct?
Partially, Your Honor. We responded in terms of preparing the administrative record. We responded also by filing a motion to dismiss because the notice wasn't filed with the agency.
When did you file the notice to dismiss?
I believe it was in 2006, if I'm not mistaken. The language of 250504.
So this project is still parked because of this litigation?
The project is still parked, not only because of our motion to dismiss, but there were other procedural difficulties in the case not occasioned by the commission.
Okay. Judge Ringland seems to think that the Court of Appeals is honoring form over substance and has been, and points out that prior judges criticized this 12th District view of things as well.
Judge Ringland did do that in his dissent, Your Honor, but I must add that it's not just the 12th District's view. It's the view that predominates in the majority of the appellate districts in this state. Also, Judge Ringland, in his dissent, did not address the fact that in 1986, effective March 87, the General Assembly amended 250504 and 250503B and eliminated what this court had pointed out as a lack of clarity in Dudakovich. The former version of 250504 referred to appeals from tribunals, officials, lower courts. In the amendment, the General Assembly specifically included administrative-related appeals. As it now stands, 250504 specifically refers to the rules of appellate procedure and the rules of this court concerning appeals from lower courts. However, it doesn't make an express application of procedural rule to administrative-related appeals. What the General Assembly did was in 250503B, it made that application by requiring the rules of appellate procedure to apply to administrative appeals from agencies of political subdivisions if Chapter 119 didn't apply, which it does not, if there's no other code provision that applies, and there's not, and if there's no other relevant provision in the chapter, which there is not. So the rules of appellate procedure must apply to appeals from agencies such as the Commission.
But in this instance, service was made by the clerk in a timely fashion with the correct document. Do I have that right?
Your Honor, you're correct that service of process was issued by the clerk of the Common Pleas Court.
Yes.
And was received by the agency. It was not filed with the agency.
If the law that we've put out in Dudakovich says that you can do that by mailing a copy of the notice, and we've said any method productive of certainty of accomplishment would be countenanced, what more could be done by filing a document, maybe with FedEx delivering it or having someone personally drop it off?
Your Honor, if I could address both of your questions. First of all, Dudakovich was decided prior to the amendments. And while the court had a concern and held the actual delivery was what was required, now the General Assembly has specifically applied the rules of appellate procedure, which require under Rule 3 that appeals be filed with the trial court. In administrative appeals, of course, the commission is the trial court. Common Pleas Court is the court of appeals in such agency appeals. So to follow what Welsh is proposing, we now are filing notices of appeal with the court of appeals, and the court of appeals is serving them on the trial court.
I guess that doesn't really address the question, because a clerk could, for example, refuse to comply with a precipice, saying he has no duty to do that, and then a litigant would be out. So any litigant who would choose this method of filing would do so at peril, it would seem to me.
Exactly.
But by fate, this happened to get accomplished. It happened to be successfully delivered and accomplished the purpose. We've recently held in a case where a document was timely delivered to a clerk's office, but the clerk failed to stamp it until a subsequent time, and we've held that delivery would be sufficient for purposes of filing. So by extending our thought, why wouldn't service by a clerk be the equivalent of filing?
Because in this instance, Your Honor, it is invoking the jurisdiction for the administrative appeal. And there is no statutory authority for a clerk to invoke jurisdiction on behalf of a litigant. This court in the Roush case recently said, basically, clerks don't file. Parties file, clerks certify. So a clerk cannot file an administrative appeal with the agency. And that brings me to the other point.
Let me just follow up. Can FedEx file it?
That's where I was going, Your
Honor. Okay.
Certainly. Someone who is operating as a representative of the administrative appellant, the attorney, the express mail service, we don't have a problem with that. The fact is that the appellant put that in motion through that agent. However, a clerk of courts is not an agent for an administrative appellant. The clerk cannot file or invoke jurisdiction. That is our proposition.
Counsel, are you saying that the FedEx driver invokes jurisdiction?
No, I'm saying, Your Honor, that the FedEx driver is acting on behalf of the appellant. Certainly,
he's delivering a document that was prepared by the attorney, ergo the party.
Yes.
Okay. And that same document prepared by the attorney representing the party is given to a clerk of court, a very secure way of determining receipt with the file, the stamp, et cetera, with the instruction to deliver that to the Common Pleas Court, correct?
To Common Pleas Court, yes.
All right, and the agency?
They may give instructions to send it to the agency.
Okay, and you find a true distinction between that and a FedEx driver?
Yes, because there is nothing in the statutes that allow a clerk of courts to serve, number one, as an agent for a litigant.
Does it say it has to be an agent? I mean, is that word used?
Well, in the duties of the clerk that are outlined in the statute, and as this court had mentioned in Roush, certification of filing, preparing documents for the court, things like that. But nowhere in the statute does it say.
Is the mailman an agent of the party, the attorney?
The U.S. mail is a means of transmission, Your Honor. I don't know that.
But you just made a distinction between the UPS and the clerk, and you're saying it's important that the clerk is not the agent. So you're telling me that the mailman's the agent.
It's a method of transmission, Your Honor.
Well, is he an agent?
I don't know that the administrative appellant files a legal document to get the mailman to deliver an administrative appeal, whereas they file a precipice, a legal document instructing the clerk to serve process. But the other distinction, Your Honors, is, again, we're back to where is an appeal filed. The burden on an administrative appellant is not onerous. They file the appeal with the agency. This court in Dudakovich said, as a practical matter, you must file with the court.
Didn't they also file a courtesy copy with the prosecuting attorney?
They did, who was, in that context, an adversarial representative of an adversarial party. And I don't see anywhere in the rules where you can serve an adversarial party.
No, I'm not saying that that was a substitute, but
okay. Is
that fatal? Because they served an additional party that wasn't statutorily required to receive a notice.
As a matter of professional courtesy, certainly that's to be commended, but it doesn't perfect an appeal. But they did.
They're not claiming it did.
They didn't in this particular appeal. You know, the issue's been raised below.
Counsel, I understand your technical argument and your legal argument. What I want to know is, in this case, did anything go amiss because this perhaps less than precise method was utilized? The administrative agency got it. They filed it. They sent the transcript to the court. And everything proceeded as it should.
Well, if in terms of practical operation of litigation, I don't think anything went amiss, Your Honor, but certainly there was no jurisdiction because the appeal was never filed with the agency.
I understand that argument. I'm just putting that aside for a moment and saying, right. In spite of that, did everything else happen as it should have, the same as if the document had been filed directly with the Regional Planning Commission?
As far as I'm aware, Your Honor. I'd like to also mention one of our other arguments is that the method proposed by Welsh Development would modify a jurisdictional statute, which is substantive law in the state of Ohio. Of course, a procedural rule cannot modify substantive law. 250504 is jurisdictional, this court has held, which makes it substantive law. The General Assembly has said specifically we're going to apply the rules of appellate procedure to administrative appeals from agencies of a political subdivision. Rule 3 requires that the appeal be filed with the trial court of the agency. The agency then copies Common Pleas Court or the Court of Appeals. Welsh's proposition alters that procedure and therefore alters the jurisdictional statute, which is not permitted. The Commission then asks the Supreme Court to affirm the decision of the 12th District Court of Appeals, which is the majority view among the district courts of appeals in this state, and affirm its holding that Welsh's procedure was inappropriate under the statute and not sufficient to perfect jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you reserved less than 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. First, I want to go back to a question posed by Justice O'Donnell, and you asked or you made reference to this court's recent holding in a case about actual delivery, and I believe your reference was to the City of Zanesville case. Counsel for the appellee said that this case was different because it was about invoking jurisdiction in this case. It was about invoking jurisdiction in the City of Zanesville case as well, because the issue there was whether the complaint, the criminal complaint, had been filed or not. So that's not a distinction that we have in this case. Counsel for the appellee also indicated that there was some distinction between the appellant having used a third-party courier or the U.S. mail or something like that, because in that case the appellant had itself put the process in motion. Regardless of what happened here, the appellant put the process in motion. Notices of appeal do not appear out of thin air to be served on somebody. This process happened, as it always does when an appeal is taken, because an appellant puts that process in motion. Going back to your first question, Chief Justice O'Connor, about what would happen if the clerk served it sua sponte without a precipice, that's a tougher case. Because of the sua sponte aspect of it, but nonetheless, I answered the question the way I did because it's still an appellant who put that entire process in motion. The final point I would like to make, unless there are any other questions, is that the appellee's argument about the amendments to Chapter 25 and the applicability of the rules of appellate procedure don't change anything at all here from the Dudikovich rule. The argument assumes its conclusion. The whole issue here is whether there was a filing in the lower tribunal or not. Their argument assumes that there was no filing in the lower tribunal and says, therefore, we filed in the wrong tribunal. That can't be permitted under the statute. So it's a circular or it's an argument that assumes its own conclusion. The second point and problem with their argument on the appellate rules is that the appellate rules themselves do not place limitations on the identity of the deliverer. So we're right back to the same proposition here.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.